Welcome to the Boost Your Boutique podcast. I'm your host, Emily Benson, corporate merchant turned boutique owner turned consultant. I want you to start, grow, and scale your boutique business right here with me. If you're ready to master your mindset, margins, and marketing, you're in the right place.
Noelle, I am beyond excited for you to be on the podcast because not only are you my best friend, but you are like one of the smartest women I know, and you just are connected in so many ways. So welcome to the Boost Your Boutique podcast.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me, and thank you for officially calling me your best friend on the podcast, because I would agree with that, even though there are probably, you know, a handful of people who may disagree, and I can think of one particular group chat that might pop off at that. But I think it's true. I've been here for a long time.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to get into like your insights and why the heck I'm even having you on this, because you don't own a boutique. You're not really in the boutique space. However, there's a lot of connections and there's a reason that you're here. But let's start off first with just like why we know each other, how we know each other. This is kind of hilarious because honestly, this morning I was talking about us in college to this college girl.
We're wearing jean jackets too. Like that just happened. We didn't even plan that.
With black underneath, the black
shirt. Yeah. And some mixed metal accessories as well.
So many in our bracelets. Yeah.
Bracelets. I can wear them.
Yeah, queens. Okay. So you and I met at Syracuse University in probably what, like 2001 or two? I feel like we met very early on in college.
Yeah. Very early, yeah.
Like easily freshman year, because Andy Sloan was like our mutual friend.
Freshman year, yeah, for sure.
Andy Sloan. Okay.
2001,
yeah. Okay, so we met in 2001, which, gosh, that's a long time ago now. And we were friends because our mutual friend was very artistic and I was in the art program with him, but you were in the fancy communication school. And were you always magazine journalism major?
Yeah. Because that's a thing.
Yeah. I mean, 20 years
ago. Like writing and journalism and graphics and all of that. And so we kind of overlapped. Like, I think you took a graphics class. Was that it?
Well, I think we met like socially first. We were like socially friends. And then I think by junior year, you were like, let's like screw around and take a class together. And so we took graphic design with Sherry Taylor at Newhouse. Yeah.
That's right. Remember, like be at the computer lab and be like dorky design dork, spending hours looking at like kerning and pixels and fonts and like printing out way too many things to that color printer. And like, we thought that was so cool. That was how we spent our time, was like at the library and at the computer lab and like just designing and playing and like having fun with our art. And that was like such a special time. I love Syracuse.
Syracuse was so great. And also, let's not fail to mention two major things that we did together. So one is, I think, really major. The other, I think, is like major. But the first major thing is we were the first editors at our school-run magazine called Jerk Magazine, which still exists. We were the first fashion editors. We introduced a fashion section to the student-run magazine together. We did photo shoots. We had sponsors. We put together like 8 pages of a section of a magazine that got printed and distributed. Was it quarterly? Maybe like four times a year.
Well, yeah, maybe quarterly.
Yeah, but that was like, that was a whole thing. Did you forget that was the deal?
I know, because I remember going around and like going to the boutiques on M Street and on Westcott and asking if we could borrow clothes for the photo shoots. And then
getting
being like
the dirtiest
what
looks.
Are you talking about? And we're like, we're fashion editors, okay?
So we were immediately like, we created this section, and now we're the most famous fashion editors in Syracuse. Like
we need to get into this gym so we can have a photo shoot. And then we brought our friends. Remember, we did that photo shoot at one of the I forget which locker room.
It was so good. It was a shoe editorial photo shoot about shoes.
Yeah, it was so fun.
I will never forget. We called it Shoe d'etat. We thought we were the most interesting people on the planet.
I was a French minor as well as being a magazine journalism major. So, shoe d'etat. We were like, we were truly living our best lives. I thought I wanted to be a fashion magazine editor. And so I was like fully on that track.
Yep.
And you were in surface pattern design slash...
I like made up my own major kind of where like I technically was a surface pattern design major. So I was like painting designs, but most of the girls in my like 14 woman major were designing for like wallpaper and rugs. Like they work at like Anthropology and on HGTV now. Like they do bigger things. I was like, no, I want to work in fashion. So I did all the fabric for clothing. So like I would design the fabric and then I'd like decide what I would drape it on like digitally or whatever. But it was a big deal because the surface pattern design program, we had like a digital printer that would print on fabric. And it was like a huge deal back then, like such a big deal. And you had to like design the perfect piece that you could print. And we made scarves.
Well, I remember you and Andy like measuring these square, perfect squares so they could be repeatable.
It was a big deal. Yeah, it was a big deal. And honestly, that's where, I mean, you and I think through like, yes, the editorial stuff and doing like being creative, but also just like we like to have fun on the weekends. Like I feel like we were the people that were like, what are we supposed to do when we're not in school? Like let's make up activities. So we're like, let's start a business because like we don't know what we're doing, but we don't care.
Well, who was it? It was either because before there was Jerk, I worked at the Daily Orange. And I think it was one of my like feature stories was we went to Goodwill and shot how to make a Halloween costume at Goodwill. And you and Andy and I dressed you guys up in those fitting rooms. We took a bunch of pictures. I still have these pictures. They are iconic. And we put together like this whole feature story for the student newspaper about like how to have fun with clothes at Goodwill. And that kind of started us like, then we started just like dressing up all the time. Like you just wore that stewardess outfit like for fun because you looked really cute in it. We found this like 60s airline stewardess looking Goodwill outfit. And you were just like, this is hot. I'm going to wear this out. And we started having fun with our clothes and then, you know, shopping at Goodwill instead of shopping at the shops. And then kind of refashioning them and really before you knew this was a job, like styling it. We were styling is what we were really doing. And then we were doing a little bit of sewing and designing too, but it was really just about like a style and expressing ourselves and being really unique and having fun and showing up looking like, remember we like went through a whole Gwen Stefani phase where like I was teasing my hair up and we were like ripping apart all our t-shirts, you know, we were so tacky and wonderful and wild and free. And it was just incredible.
We fully thought we were Harajuku girls at one point, fully. We were like, we're going to Japan. We're doing it. Like we're so into it. Meanwhile, I just want to remind everyone, this is pre-Facebook. Like this is pre-internet. This is pre-Instagram, social media. Like Facebook literally came out, I think our junior or senior year, maybe senior year, I think it came out. Yeah. So like we were doing all of this in this bubble, just being absolutely ridiculous. And honestly, we got a lot of attention for it, like enough attention that this business we started that was like ups, I would call it upcycling now. Like we'd go to Goodwill, cool stuff. We'd cut it up. We'd remake things. Like we would put a collection together that was so junky now that we look back, but like we didn't care. We thought we were doing it. And
We were doing it all ourselves. No one was telling us what to do. For what we put together in like my shitty apartment. You know what I mean?
I didn't even know how to sew.
$200 from your Aunt Joan. Let's shout out Aunt Joan, who literally was like, I want to fund the House of Noem. That's what we called our little fashion business.
Yeah, we called our fashion business House of Noem because it was the combination of Noelle and Emily. And my Aunt Joni, I want to say she gave us like $500, which was like
major cash infusion. And it's really like, let's just talk about our respectability as business owners that we did not spend that on hookers and blow, or it didn't go to the bar. That really did go to fund our business. We went to Goodwill and we bought so much crap with that $500. And we had like an apartment full of material and clothes. And we put these collections together. So what we need to tell the people, we did full-blown fashion shows.
We
tested like 24 people. We did a charitable fashion show with a fraternity and a sorority. We did Syracuse art fashion shows with an art institution located in downtown Syracuse. We did those at the museum. We did them, like, these were official, real fashion shows, and we designed collections.
And yeah, we were like headliners too. They were like, headlined by the House of Noem. Oh, let us do that, Noelle. Like, what? Like, I just feel like now where people are like, you have the audacity. Like, we had all the audacity in college. Like, people were like, why are you moving out of Syracuse? Like, you should stay here and just like keep doing this. And we were like, well, we're graduating. So, like,
oh my God, we got called in. Oh my God, so many great moments. But one of the best was we got called in. Who called us to do a talk at a local high school in a Syracuse suburb to like inspire the seniors?
So I don't know how anyone got our number.
We got called into the senior class. Emily and I show up in outfits of our own design. My pants are fully sheer. Like, I didn't clock that was not a cool thing to do, but my pants were like fully sheer. I'm in like a halter top. Emily's clothes, you know, are like tied together. And we come in and we're like,
I think I had a blazer on. So I was like somewhat appropriate.
We're like, college is cool. Try hard. Get a scholarship. You know, pursue your dreams. And then I remember at the end of that, the teacher was like, please don't wear these clothes in public again. But also, you gals should move to Williamsburg. Remember, she was like, all the cool people are going to this place called Williamsburg. You guys should look in.
You're totally right. I mean, I 100% remember you getting in trouble for showing up to a high school with like sheer pants. That was so iconic. But you're right. I forgot that she was like in the know, like the Syracuse local.
She saw us. She totally saw us. She's like, you guys need to get to New York City ASAP.
We roundabout
got there. It took a while, but we did both end up there a couple years later.
Yeah, we did roundabout get there. And I think, you know, let me like sum up college is like, we did what we wanted. We did it pretty professionally, and we did it with like a level of class and style where people took us seriously.
Well, we were fully supported. Like, this is where I will shout out Syracuse. We had access to these amazing creative tools, professors who really pushed us, who gave us tons of access and free time to play and explore with our art. And like, our minds were just so rich. And I think you and I and our whole friend group, we were all just like reveling in this. Remember how much we love to talk about the collective unconscious? And like, we were all just like on such a creative vibe and really, truly, I think, getting that great college experience. And I hope every young person has in college, you know, with being able to like have those resources, have that inspiration and just play.
It was like a time of great privilege, I feel like, in our lives where we were fully supported. And also, we were still like poor college kids. So we were like figuring out and being scrappy on the side, too. You know what I mean?
He remember driving me to Aldi to grocery shop?
In my like hand-me-down Oldsmobile Cutlass Sierra. Yeah, I'll never forget that car. We drove that car to Montreal randomly one day, right? Remember, we were like, let's just go. Why didn't we need passports?
Because it was early 2000s. It was probably pre-9/11.
I think it was like right after 9/11. I think that's what it was, and not all those rules. But like, we were just like, let's get in the car and go to Montreal. Screw it. And like, just would go. Like, just
living, living for life. Yeah. I mean, that's what college should be. It's obviously very different for us now. Things got really different for us in the real world. We've both gone through motherhood, parenthood, that wonderful triple vice of millennial womanhood that is being a breadwinner, being a mom, and being a caregiver. You know, like, I'm so glad we had a carefree college existence. Thank God we did. Because otherwise, I would not be okay right now. I would not be okay. We have, like, really gone through it since then. Living through not just 9/11, but the Great Recession, and now this freaking pandemic, and the craziest food inflation we're facing, you know, like all the things. So let us be grateful for our storied past.
I mean, truly, truly, like those we were living such a good life. And I mean, here's the thing. We fully were like, we're going to keep doing House of Noem after school. We were like, we're committed. We're going to do this. And we tried to get a job together at Abercrombie & Fitch in Ohio. We like both interviewed. We went out there. We were like little Bobsy twins, like Bobsy with fashion twins. And the sad story is like, I got the job and Noelle didn't get the job. And so it was like, all of a sudden, our dreams were shattered. Like, we remember we were like,
first real time in the
sewing room. No, we had like such big plans for our company in Columbus, and then you didn't get the job, and I was like,
yeah.
Oh no, what are we gonna do?
And you, like, moved there alone, and I was like crushed.
Yeah,
but I ended up then moving to New York to work in publishing. I got a job because, like, this is
Wait, back up. You're really burying the lead here, because, like, you got such a good job. But was it an internship at first? It was an internship.
Yeah, it was not actually even. It was like $6 an hour. So it was no. The thing is, okay, we have to remember this is like 2005.
Yep.
I still remember the starting salary for Abercrombie. It was good. It was like a good job out of college. And I think it was like
$42,000.
Yeah.
I made $42,000 and they paid for relocation. They like,
oh, it was like,
I got a signing bonus or something.
Good job out of college. Really, I remember I was devastated when I didn't get it because, oh, here's what I said though. In the interview, they're like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I was like, I see myself as a fashion magazine editor. And she was like, this is a retail company. And I was like,
oh, why are you here?
So I didn't get that job, but I did. Yeah. So I got, but I got a much worse paid job for Oprah, which is cool, which is cool. That was very cool.
And you were like in the fashion department, weren't you? Like doing beauty, fashion, like you were kind of like in that world.
Oh my God. I got invited to fashion shows. I got to go to like all these parties. I still have like Chanel shoes and bags and everything like that. And that got me where I am today. So look, I'm good. I'm okay.
But
basically, gals, when you go into a job interview and they ask you where you want to be in 5 years, say you want to be there. Okay. Yes.
I'd like to work my way up in this company, please.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, you know, kudos for your honesty, because like you did get the job in magazines and you did like that's what you have now done. Like pretty much your whole career is like publishing, magazine. Now it's turned into digital because, Noelle, before we even go on, I have to tell you, we had this babysitter come last year. And I was like, can you just go through this pile of like magazines? It was catalogs. It was just like a bunch of print media, basically. And she looked at me and she goes, I don't know the difference between like a catalog and a magazine. Like she couldn't, like she was just like wasn't in that world. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, wow, okay. But it like was really stark because, I mean, she's like 20, you know what I mean? And I was thinking like, wow, like you were legitimately a magazine journalism major. And now this person 20 years later doesn't know the difference between a magazine catalog. Like, holy moly, things have changed really quickly. And you've had to go through all that in your career. So like, let's talk about just a little bit of like a highlight reel of kind of the companies you've worked at / I guess magazines, publications. And like what your role is and has been in all these places.
Okay. So my role is essentially to sell advertising space around these publishing brands. And so early in my career, it was print space in print magazines like, oh, the Oprah magazine, which was an absolutely huge print vehicle back in the early 2000s. Now, from there, it's really evolved. And now the ad spaces that I'm selling are social videos, are digital primarily. Like, instead of just an ad next to an article, it's an integrated, you know, social video from one of our brands integrating with the partner. So it's a totally different product that I'm selling today versus what I was selling then. But essentially, it's the same thing. I need to get in to see a client. I need to convince them that what I have to offer is of value. I need to find out how to make it of value to them, because sometimes they're not advertising in with my brands, or sometimes they don't believe in the types of things I'm talking about. So it's a process of getting in, building awareness, making sure they understand what I'm offering, and then trying to find those fits, you know, trying to find that right fit for my clients are all food and beverage because I'm in the Midwest now. It's not as sexy as when I was in New York and I had like, you know, all kinds of fashion and beauty and liquor and TV advertisers. Remember when I had Showtime and HBO as clients in New York? And we would get invited to like the Tribeca Film Festival and like the Showtime premiere parties. So that was the
parties. And you did real estate for a while. You were selling real estate. And we would get invited to these bomb real estate parties for like this beautiful new place overlooking Central Park, and you're like, want to come to a party? And I was like, always. I will always come to a party. because they were.
Yeah. That, at that phase of my career, that was okay. So that was like after my very first job, I got hired as an individual seller at Time Out New York. And that was where we had all the fun parties because Time Out, it was all about going out. So I remember the Time Out years, like I had to make a rule that I wasn't going to go out on Mondays and Tuesdays anymore because we were going out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We were going all the time.
Fully.
Parties, yep. This like opening event, Tribeca Film Festival. Remember we went to that art party and saw Jeff Goldblum? Like,
God, that was one of your parties. Yeah.
Oh my God. We were out all the time doing that stuff. And then this was the era when we started to also play into some other creative things because remember you connected with our friend Janet who had a fashion line, this gray fashion collection. And Emily, who's always been a bit of an entrepreneur, even though you were like very much a corporate girly at that point, you were like, Noelle, why don't we put our PR girl hats on and throw a New York Fashion Week event for our girl Janet, who was trying to launch a collection at the time. So I reached out to one of my real estate advertisers and I was like, can we use your empty penthouse? And they miraculously were like, yeah. And we threw a fashion show during Fashion Week.
During Fashion Week. Yeah.
We got the Wall Street Journal to come and cover it. We got Women's Wear Daily to come and cover it. I mean, we threw a whole event. We had our friends working the door. We even had an after party with a password. Like, we were so dead serious about it. We had so much. We kind of like retouched on that just fun, playful, creative. Like neither of us made any money off of that at all.
No, we made no money. In fact, we probably spent money just partying and stuff after. No, remember I got my cousin, Doug, to project her logo on the building across the street from the penthouse. So when you looked during the show, you could look outside and see her logo on the building.
Skyline and her logo was so cool.
For sure, we had no permits for any of it, but we just did it. I mean, that's the thing about, and one of the reasons I want to have you on is because you and I are the type of people, we're just like, we have this idea and we're going to go for it. And we're going to put the blinders on. We're not going to ask for permission. In fact, like, we didn't even think that we needed to ask for permission, let alone even like, you know, skip that part. It was just like, no, we're going to do this and we're going to do this. And I think the spirit we've always had.
Well, like, the number of emails I've started that are like, this might sound a little weird, but would you be okay if. And people are like, yeah, you know, like that was, we threw that fashion party that was in what, 2009 or 2000, no, it was earlier. It was in the lowest.
07, 08?
Yeah, real estate recession. The real estate recession was crushing New York real estate. These penthouse apartments could not find qualified buyers. They were desperate to get any kind of foot traffic in. They couldn't afford to advertise. Like, my business was in a free fall and we just put together these stats. We were like, our girl needs space. These people want cool people in. Fashion has so many cool people. We can get some headlines and press out of this. You know, that's how we've always thought, right? We're just like, and we can have a whole party and make a password for it. Like, awesome. Bye.
There's a party involved. we're doing it. Like, if it's a project plus a party, like, yes, we're in, we're signed up. I'll work my tail off. Just to go to that party, even I've made no money doing it. Like me, like again, I think like so interesting how many things we've done. This is a good reminder for me and a lot of people. Like, it was a long time until I started really making my own money doing these fashion projects. Most of them we lost money or we were putting out money or we didn't even have a budget. Let's be real. We were just like, all right, we'll ask our friends for help. Like we just.
It was so slapdash. It was literally like, I forget how. I think because Janet was officially a designer and had some connection to the Council of Fashion Designers.
Yeah, like we could register her or something.
And she got some kind of mailing list, you know? And I've never worked officially in PR, but I know enough that I know what to do with a mailing list. Yeah, and we pieced together a press release and we sent that out and we collected RSVPs and we just did what we kind of like instinctively know how to do as like people who like to have parties, I guess, and people who want to get, I don't know. I think it's also we can't discount the fact that I worked in the press and I had internships in PR and I did have some awareness. I knew how to work these channels, you know, I knew how to follow up with a journalist. I knew what they wanted to get out of an event. And so that always helped us, even though I professionally, I was on the other side of all those trades as a seller in the publishing space. That awareness, I was always about like using my powers for good, you know? So I'm like, if I can help Janet, of course I'm going to help Janet. And if we can have fun and have a party with a password, then bonus points for me. But that also then played in, because I do remember it was shortly after that, maybe a couple years though. It seems so short now, where you came to me with the sketch for the fashion truck. And you were like, I'm going to do this. And I was like, this girl is so crazy. Like, I remember being like, you just need to get another corporate job, Emily. Just like get another job. Just interview and get another job. And that was my, you know, that was like all my internalized patriarchy talking, because I'm like, this is so scary for you. But you have always been that friend for me and for all of us, I think. And I think for all of your followers and everyone too, like you have this courage, this vision. You saw it. You saw it before anyone was doing this. And you had this little sketch and you're like, I'm going to do this. And I was like, this girl's bonkers, but all right, like I'll put a press release together for you. And so I was like behind the scenes making little shoddy press releases and help support in. And you were
on, you're like, we're getting you on Chronicle. You're like, we're getting you in the Boston Globe. We're getting, you were like, okay, who do we need to know? All right, we're looking all this stuff up. I mean, like once I really bought the truck and I was like, we're doing this, you were like, okay, doggy, like, let's ride the train. Okay, I'll ride it with you. And I'd be like, can you do this? What do you think about this? I mean, you've always been like, I think like comedians, you know, you always have like your writing partner. Like you're my writing partner. You know what I mean? You're the person behind the scenes who like I'm always kind of calling and being like, what do you think about this? Or like I'm texting you a graphic and like, you're like, that's sexy. Like I feel like you are just always the yes woman to like my weird sketches. Okay, like let's do it. Like, all right, you know? And I mean, honestly, Noelle, the thing is like,
because I've been a beneficiary of so many.
Well, I think you're like a little bit of like a muse in a way too, of like, you know, like I think the thing is, and this is like what you're saying about like the internalized patriarchy and like all of this stuff. It's like when you have good women next to you, beside you, alongside you, you can do anything. Like you really can. And I think like finding that person, even if it's literally one person, we are very blessed to have more than one person kind of like in our circle of friends. Totally. At this point, and even like we have like extensions of like we have these like sort of side friends we have here and there. I mean, like we have a really big network of people.
Rich,
I think
it's a rich soup. It's a whole vibe, actually.
Yeah. But that's what you need. And I think like there's so many people listening that are out there that don't have that support system or don't have that friend that like you text them the crazy idea and they're like, yeah, okay. You know, and like we've said this very candidly about boyfriends, about projects, about jobs, about moves, because like our whole friend group has, we're all over the place doing lots of things. And we are like very unconditionally supportive. Like unless it's like a real train wreck of like, wait, this actually might ruin your life. Like, we pretty much are just like, yeah, follow that gut, follow your intuition, follow your thought, follow your... You know, and there's so much of that, that like, that's where the magic comes out of. I mean, like, honestly,
are you coming to me with something, Emily, that's like, I want to burn my whole life down? What you're coming to me is like, this is really crazy, but I think I'm going to ask for more help. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. You know, that's the thing. We need that so much. You need to have the people in your life that are going to say yes to you. Those things you are so scared to ask for are those things you need to ask for the most. And you've always given me permission. Like, I remember there's this, talk about grocery shopping. I did grocery shop at Aldi for a long time. And it took me a while, but I distinctively remember being at Target with you in college and you reaching for like a big expensive box of cereal and me being like, oh my God, you know, like she's going to buy the brand name and it's more expensive, you know? And you're just like, but I want it. And I was like, oh, that like broke something in me, you know, literally broke something in me. I came home and I was like, oh my God, I can have the things that I want. I can.
I mean, I nannied all summer for that freaking cereal. Okay. Like
you worked hard, but it was like you give me permission for stuff that I don't think I can ask for. And then I'm so happy to do that for you. And I think that's what makes us really good friends, right? Is we balance each other out, because you will say yes to the brand name cereal, but no to the help.
1,000% every day. I can do that myself, but I'm going to need a brand name sweet treat after.
I'm going to need the hint of lime Tostitos.
Baby, don't even bring those up. Those are so good. Those are the best for nachos when you melt the cheese on the top. I mean, okay. The courage it takes to do all this and the fact that for 20 years, more than 20 years, we've been saying yes to each other and like, what's up? And like I think this is the moment too where like, you know, actually like looking back and talking about all this stuff has reminded me how courageous I am and how like what big leaps we've both taken just in like
huge leaps.
We're like, I'm moving to France and getting engaged. I met this French guy and we were like, but that's your lifelong dream. And you were like, yeah. And I met him and I'm doing it. And we were like, you are a manifesting queen. I mean, you manifested a French husband who like is like his mother has an apartment that overlooks the Eiffel Tower. Like, give me a break. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you manifested that because you are such a Francophile. And you were like, I'm into it. Like you, I still think you should write your romance novel on like your love story because it is so iconic.
It's a good story. It is a good story.
I'm
working on it. But okay, you know, like we've been really busy these last 20 years. You know, talk about that like triple vice. Like I think so many women our age are living that for real, especially like your kids are younger than mine and a lot of our girlfriends' kids are younger than mine. And like pandemic parenting with infant, toddler, like there's so much heaviness I think that women are still carrying and processing just from that you need good girlfriends, sisterhood. You need that so bad to be able to function and come out of this with any kind of head on your shoulders to get through any sort of day-to-day functionality. I know so many people who are just drowning and they don't even know where to start because they're so drowning in the overwhelm. And it can be so overwhelming.
It can be. But here's what I'll say. I think that if you and I have been really good, I think, about keeping as much as we can simplified, right? Like you and I talk a lot about how like you choose kind of to stay in a smaller house because like it's manageable and like you don't want to have to clean a lot and you want your kids to have less toy. You know, it's like you are consciously like choosing
As a breadwinner, you know, as someone who bears a lot of financial responsibility, I make a choice to manage the amount of pressure that I put on my own shoulders because I know about myself what will happen, you know? And I want to, that's like, it's weird to think about it, but it's like, it's self-care. It's a self-care choice, the choice, you know, because it's like, I have this low pressure. I can fly real fast and loose. We're like, this is what's funding. We're about to go to Paris to see Taylor Swift for the Thursday. It is going to be absolutely amazing. This is a girls trip that is 20 years in the making. Like, we don't do this kind of stuff. We've done some good girls trips, but like, this is going to be. That's how I choose to live, right? That's how I choose to set up my life because I love to have fun. I love to travel. I like experiences. I like to share experiences with my girlfriends, you know? So, I mean, I can't wait to go and do this. But yeah, I think structuring your life, structuring your businesses, structuring your finances, making those choices. And then the other thing we talk about a lot is owning those choices, you know, as a woman and being informed and being involved and guiding those choices gives you so much agency and so much freedom than as I think it also allows me as a businesswoman to operate with a lot more levity. You know what I mean? Because I can approach a deal and I don't have that like seething desperation.
Gotta make the sale. Yeah.
Oh my God. How am I going to make my payment? You know, I can approach a deal from like, what's really going to serve? What's really going to hit? And it allows me to be a better partner to my clients. It allows me to be a better partner to my friends. I can come home with less stress for my kids. You know, it's all good.
Listen, we're both the breadwinner, which I still like hate that term, but it is what it is. But I think there's a lot of women listening who are in the same spot or really close to the same spot or are scared to become in that spot.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, because our dynamics and the systemic structures that have been built are not really afforded the luxuries to women that may have been afforded to men in the past when they were the breadwinner, right? And so I think there's such a cultural shift around, like, and I hate the word empowerment, but that really is what it is. It's like women are, we're calling our power back in. We're saying, hey, like, we can do it all. We don't want to, actually. Like, we like to have some help and some support. And, but also, I love that you're pointing out that you are making active choices to protect yourself and your sanity, because your income does fluctuate, right? Because you are commission-based in your ad sales, right? So very, very similar to a boutique in that you kind of never know what's coming, but you kind of do. But like one day you're making a ton, the next day you're like, darn, that deal fell.
There's very dry seasons. And then there's like Q4, which is bananas, right? Which is very similar to how retail works, right?
Yep. Yep.
Because you have these real big swings. And in fact, oh my God, this is why I feel so blessed to have you as a best friend, because as all these swings are happening throughout the year, like Emily is, I'm sorry to tell you guys, my free coach that I get to call all the time and get like free coaching. And so when I'm going through one of those panic moments where it's like, it's a dry spell, I'm not hearing back from folks, like my numbers look like shit, and I'm in that panic spiral, I get to call Emily and she's like, hey, remember who you are, you know, this is fine. This is okay. Reframe, redirect, go for a walk. She knows I love to make stickers at the library. So she's like, go to the library. She knows I'm like a, you know, graphic design girly who wants to have fun with stuff. So she'll redirect me and I get that little beat. I reframe and I come back into focus. And I think that's so key, because there's so many things, right, that'll pull you off track. So many little stressors, so many flare-ups, whether it's, you know, a client you didn't close, or it's a sale you see walk out the door, you know, it can be really demoralizing. And I think that's what we talk a lot about, this, because this is where my role as a seller is so hot, closely mirrored, right? Because it's like, I chase every dollar. I chase every dollar I can get. Like, I'm gone's ablaze. And when I see a close, it does disappoint me. And it can really quickly throw me off track if I don't quickly redirect and remember, hey, I've got other deals in the pipeline. I've got other customers I can talk to. I always have new deals coming in. I can always come up with something new, you know, and reframing with some of those great like coaching tips and business tools, right? Like, it's not just what you say to yourself. It's like, go back to your toolkit and what works for you, instead of going down the, let me beat myself up over what a loser I am because that sale didn't close.
Well, and half of it is because we are women and we are in touch with our emotions. We immediately think it's our fault or something we said or something we did. I mean, you and I are the best examples of people that can really beat themselves up, because we do have such high standards and we have had such successes in our lives that when we don't hit those marks, we're like, it's us. We're a bad person. I'm ugly. I don't have the right clothes on. Like, you know, the negative thoughts can be really crippling. But like, I like how you're saying it is a reframe. It is a like knowing there's more things coming, knowing that like, because you've put all this work in, it's not this make it or break it moment. Like, moment is make it or break it. Like, it can't be, or we're just living on the edge all the time. Can't be like
that. Oh, yeah, no, that's a quick way to burn out, for sure. A quick way to burn out. I mean, we've been so excited watching the Women's March Madness, and I've always loved basketball. And I think, like, you think about the power of a rebound, right? If you can master a rebound, you can master the game. And that's what it's all about, is not letting that little offset, whatever it is, whether it's your childcare fell through, your deal fell through, your partner is sick, and now you have to do all of this alone. Your parents just called you up with some crazy inflammatory request, which happens all the time. Before you know, walk down that whole track, like, pause, breathe, hold up. What's really going to serve here? How can I be of help here? And what's going to help me here? You know, I think as women, we're so quick to be like, oh my God, somebody needs something. Let me quickly bend over backwards and give them everything they need. You know, and as a capable person who I'm able to juggle a lot, I always feel like, sure, you know, what do you need? You need something done, give it to a busy person. That's me. But you end up taking on so much, and then you lose focus. And suddenly you're like, why am I yelling at my partner? Why am I, you know, why am I so burnt out? Why am I reeking of desperation on every call? And it's like, oh, because you haven't taken the time to set all that shit aside, right?
You haven't reset your power structure too. Like you're giving away your power. Like my therapist would be like, why are you giving your power to that thing? Like that's you get to choose whether you give that away or not. Like, I mean, even speaking about like women's basketball and March Madness, like think about those everyone watches women's sports t-shirts where it's like Sue Bird was like, actually, no, like that's not true. Like people, the media said, no one watches. And she literally put it on a t-shirt. She put it on a sweatshirt that says everyone watches women's sports. That shirt was everywhere the past month. Everyone made it in a special color for South Carolina after they won the championship. Like she is literally putting on a t-shirt what she wants to happen and what not only what she wants to happen, but what she knows the reality is too, right? The reality of us sitting here is we are very powerful women. We have created a lot of wonderful things in our life. What's to say that cannot continue? Well, because one crappy thing happened, because it's been a bad year, because it's been a bad couple weeks, because it's been, I mean, no freaking way. Like, no way. And I think that's the thing is like, if there's one thing we can learn from women's sports and this whole NCAA thing that like, yeah, we're both so jazzed about it. I'm like, let's start an athletic company that inspires girls to play sports. And da-da. It's because
I was literally on the contact me page for Sue Bird's company together being like, do you need any sellers? Can I sell for you? I love you. I love this. I love everything you're doing. Like, I'm so in on it. It's just great. I think what's great for me is watching women be excellent, watching them be excellent and be recognized for it. You know, like the viewership breaking all these rules, you know, oh my gosh, that to me is just, that is something I haven't seen in our lifetime yet. And it is so fulfilling. It's so wonderful to see.
Listen, I'm going to go out on a limb and just say that it's like this year's Barbie movie. Like it's the evolution of it where it's like the Barbie movie was doing it in the theater, in a fake world. Women's NCAA basketball is doing it in real life. They're doing it on a stage that is huge. They're doing it in our country in such an amazing way.
Yeah, and let's do the election too, ladies. Go out and vote.
Go vote. Go vote.
Don't get distracted like they do in the Barbie movie. You know, in the Barbie movie, remember, everyone go out and watch it. Don't get distracted.
Don't get distracted. No, that's it. Like, I think we're seeing the mirror. We're seeing things for women change. And like, honestly, like I should just call this like the Inspiring Women series, because like you are someone that inspires me. And I think that when you have those people in your life, you see it out in the world. You meet like what you have inside your own world, you see out there, right? So it's like the more you can cultivate this community, good relationships, the people, the places, the just even the Instagram DMs. I mean, come on, like just DMing people that you like, liking their posts, like it's all gonna eventually show up out in the world. And I think that wait time is hard, right? Like I think as you get older and as you've seen yourself achieve great things and you've seen yourself have these successes, for me, sometimes it does feel like, oh God, can I do it again? You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
But you're right about the support, because you know what I said to Greg? I said, you know, Caitlin Clark didn't win. Iowa didn't win because Caitlin Clark was the Michael Jordan of that team. Michael Jordan had to learn. He needed Scottie Pippen. He needed Dennis Rodman. And like South Carolina was a whole team. It was a whole support team.
Whole team.
And like, I think from a business perspective, if you have a boutique, you have a retail shop, who around you is giving you that support, because like you are awesome. We know you're awesome and that's great. Who's going to back you up? Even if it is a partner, even if it is a child or a friend or a mother or a sister or a neighbor, you know what I mean? Like you need those
people.
Well,
can I give you one of my favorite Phil Jacksonisms?
Yeah. Let's hear it. You guys, Noelle's obsessed with the Chicago Bulls and Phil Jackson. And we're talking a lot of sports, which I don't normally talk.
I am wearing my Bulls headband too, which by the way, Emily did purchase for me for my birthday. So
She's you are wearing the bull's head band.
That okay, but so Bill Jackson, it's actually like an ancient Native American saying. And the idea is, you know, you with one twig, you can easily snap it. But three twigs together are much harder to break. Much harder to break. Together, you need those. You need that reinforcement. You need that reinforcement because you on your own, you can only do so much. So you got get some reinforcement around you, some people who are going to back you up. You know, when you're having those, when you're having that slip, you know, you need a friend who's going to pull you back up. We called our text chain for a while the High Vibe Tribe. Yeah. And it was literally, it was just like, pull you up, pull you up, pull you up, pull you up. You need those people to pull you up because there are so many forces that are going to push you aside, saddle you with work, make you feel stressed, right? And pull you off track of what you're actually trying to achieve. So, yeah, get your High Vibe Tribe. Get your inspiration sources. That I would consider that critical, like critical.
Well, and after you have that, put the blinders on. Like, put the blinders on. Believe you can have Women's Wear Daily show up at your fashion show. Believe that you can, you know, go to Goodwill and make clothes and sell them, which we never sold them and we never made money. But maybe you are more talented.
We sold a couple, you know, it was a cash business back then. We sold a couple.
We didn't have square card readers, did we? We
were just like, yeah,
taking cash, yeah, with our little fanny pack. Probably with our money.
Checks too.
We might have gotten some checks. I mean, that's it. Like, you put your blinders on and you believe so deeply in what you're doing, even if it's like, you know, I think we all feel like, oh, we have to change the world. We have to do that. It's like, nah, like, we just have to live what we want to do and live our passion. And like,
yeah,
that's going to change the world on its own.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think the other part is professors. Like, be unafraid to fail, you know, because that is inevitable. That's an inevitable part of trying. So, you know, one of my favorite go-to piece of inspiration, I've sent this video to you probably 100 times. It's a very old school video of Oprah being interviewed at the start of her Chicago show before she was, before Oprah was Oprah. And the interviewer very stupidly asks her, you know, what if this doesn't do well? And she answers in her like full Oprah self, like, if it doesn't do well, I will still do well because I believe in myself and I treat people well and I work with integrity. So I know, you know, she's like, I would love for the show to be successful. It's so funny because she speaks kind of like, oh, it'd be great if I could be a famous talk show host. And it's like, God, she realized what she has become and it's wild. But I think you got to have that wild confidence in yourself. You have to. And that's something, honestly, I got from you because you had it. And I do credit Aunt Joan again because Aunt Joan gave you those confidence tapes when you were 8 and they fucking work. Okay, they worked. Because you
had, she did. Let me sidebar story. My Aunt Joni is my like cool aunt and
cool
she had kids. So she like, you know, all of us are kind of like her kids. And she, when I was like 7 or 8, she got me these tapes, like literally cassette tapes that I played in my Teddy Ruxpin.
Yes.
And my Teddy Ruxpin doll would be like, you are great. You are confident. You are brave. Like literally affirmations for kids. And I yes. like was like, this is great. Let's do this. And then at 15, she took me to like Tony Robbins at like the Fleet Center in Boston. Like, I mean, she was like, she truly like, you know, if you have
those are gifts.
Young kids,
those are gifts.
Yeah, it was such a gift because also it just it really I am sort of like blindly confident a lot of the time. And what? I really do believe in myself like unwaveringly.
I wish you see like 19-year-old Emily with like the most Paris Hilton sunglasses on. They were like the full mirror kind. And walking into this computer lab with like 3 backpacks and like the biggest Dunkin' Donuts cup and just being like, get out of my way. Like, I'm here to put up and print out a lot of things. Like that.
Really?
I'm here. Yeah, like I'm just here. I'm here. All yeah. I'm here and I'm here to do what I want to do.
Yeah. Listen, that computer lab though. That's a computer lab. I met that grad school boyfriend, though, who was like, I saw you at the computer lab and I thought you were
pushing me. And I was like, magnetically attracted to you because you are so powerful and you were just so cool.
Yeah, that was a whole experience. Anyway, we're not going to get into my dating life, but that computer lab like holds a lot of magic.
Well, but you always had this something, and it always just inspired me because I have still working on my confidence, but I'm learning it. I'm literally learning it from watching you and watching the way you're like, of course I'm going to do this. Of course I'm going to do this. And I'm like, yeah, you are.
I mean, we're getting older now. It's like, what do I have to lose anymore? You know, I think it's one of those things where you really do. I think a lot of my confidence truly comes from like, well, what would I lose from this? Like, not much. You know, sometimes there are things where I have a lot to lose. Like I have money to lose, or I have, you know, my reputation or whatever. But I also like, I trust my gut so much, and I'm a generator in human design. And I think that's like a big piece of it is like, my gut is so powerful that when it tells me what I should do, it's such a full body thing where it's just like, well, of course I can do this. I want to talk about boutiques and like your take on them, because you're a shopper. You've gone on, again, you've like gone on this whole journey with me. I talk to you a lot about boutiques. Like you're in the know of all this stuff. What are some of the things, like you and I have talked about this a little bit, but like, what are some of these things that you're like, that pops for me when I see a boutique do it, or that really jumps out? Because again, I think as a consumer, you're someone who we should be talking to about what you think is working or what you're noticing or how you know what I mean? Like all of that to me is very important information. And because you're already in the marketplace, like selling, you know, bug killer and all these other things through your digital channels, like you do kind of see what's trending along with us and even a little bit ahead of us, I'd say, because your lead times are pretty long.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So like, what's breaking through for me? So, okay, you got to be on social, right? Like we all know social media is where people are spending their time and where people are really making a ton of shopping decisions. So I would say like focus on social, but the thing that's working against brands on social right now is you don't know who you're talking to as much, right? There's this whole privacy movement happening, right? Where you probably have heard about the cookie going away, right? Or like you may understand this just because you see on your Facebook or social media campaigns, you're not getting the same type of engagement you got before. And it's because you're not necessarily talking to the same people you were talking to before. You're kind of talking to a wider net of more unknowns, which makes it harder. Makes it harder for you as a marketer because you don't have that same, you don't know exactly who you're talking to anymore. You're not certain they're in your right demographic or geographic, or, you know, a lot of that data is now protected and private. So you as an advertiser, you got to think more boundary less, right? Like if you can't know that you're talking to a woman 25, 34, and now you're just talking to an audience, you need to break through with a message, right? You need to break through with a strong point of view, right? A strong distinction.
I love this. Yes, keep going. You're preaching. Yes, yes.
Because it's not just like, you're not just preaching to your choir, right? Like, okay, I know my girlies 25, 34, all of Taylor. So all I need to do is come up with an Eras tour concept and I know that that's going to hit. No, you don't know that anymore. Okay. So what you need to figure out is who are you as a brand? What is your distinctive? Why would anybody come to you? Right. And this is the stuff there are brands I've never heard of that all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, I've got to buy this, right? Like, I'm like, what is Rowing Blazers? I've never heard of it, but it is distinctive. I can't find it anywhere else. I have to go to Rowing Blazers, or when they collab with Target, I can go and get it there, right? What is so distinctive about your brand that I have to come to you to get it? And one of your girls who does this so well is Lex and Lala, right? Dressed in Lala. Like she has such a distinctive point of view that like, no matter where she is, I know it's her. Her people are going to come to her, whether they're women 25, 34, or whether they're women 55 plus. Like that's the beauty of having a strong, when you have that strong brand and that strong point of view, and you know who you are and your style is really distinctive and your voice sings and like, oh my God, I haven't seen that kind of look anywhere. I haven't seen that kind of style. I love how preppy that is. Or I love, like, one of the things I'm really into is like 90s mob wife. I mean, can you tell 90s mob wife? Okay. So anyone who's really nailing that aesthetic right now, like Aritzia is a retail brand that came out of nowhere, but suddenly everyone's like, I gotta buy Aritzia. And it's because they know who they are. Yeah. They know who they are.
It's them knowing who they are and trusting that those people are coming to find them and that they will find them. I think that's the biggest thing is like, you're totally right. We can't just say, oh, this is our ideal customer and I'm going to exactly target her. Like, there's a little bit of that. And then there's also a lot of like, who am I? What am I? What do I love? What do I want to sell? What do I get excited about? And
I know, because let's talk about the girls who are really spending money on the Eras tour. Okay. It's not the girlies that are 18, 34. It's us. It's the women 40 plus. Okay.
The millennials. Listen, there's a big millennial consumer right now, right? Like, millennials are pushed in a lot of ways. We have like no money, but we have all the money. And it's weird because
no money, but we're Ms. And we love a little treat. Give me a little treat.
We love a little treat. Well, and you know, it's funny. I was talking to a client about this. I just need a little treat,
like every 2 seconds.
Yeah, well, she said to me, she goes, I just feel like my customer is really busy. Like, she's driving her kids around town. She has kids. And I said, listen, a huge barrier for me with a toddler, because I'll take her anywhere. Like, we're good. She's chill. She's cool. However, she likes to touch a lot of things.
Yeah.
And like, my client said, oh, well, I have a play kitchen in my store. I was like, you have a play kitchen? That buys me 20 minutes. I can easily do a little shop in 20 minutes. I was like, tell more people you have that play kitchen. If I knew a store had a play kitchen or a little sit down, Patagonia Outlet had a little table with just a little play toy. She sat there for 10 minutes just playing by herself.
Perfectly oh my happy. God. I would buy a notebook or something just to say thank you. Honestly. To say thank you for the allowing me peruse a store in peace. I love perusing a beautiful retail store. Love.
Well, that's the thing is I think that we have to also, and I think like other people our age have kind of been talking about this because we are all having kids a little later and we're a little, you know, and we are busy and all this stuff. But I do really feel like if a space is inclusive for my child, I am way more likely to go there because the fact is I have her a lot of the time, you know, and like my Saturdays, like I just go to school, you know? So I do think we have to think about whether, you know, we're talking about a restaurant, a retail store, whatever it is, like, is there something somewhere, like, is something happening? Even, listen, we went to a restaurant that's new in town and the owners have kids, little kids like us. It was Friday night. They put all the families with kids in this one back room. It was perfect because all the kids wanted to look at each other. It was all parents, so no one cared if a kid screamed. A kid could wander around and they were like pretty safe. You know, it just like, I like wrote a Google review because I was like, this feels safe for me and my kid, you know?
Yeah.
And that was a huge bit. So I do think that there is this generation of like, hey, I'd love to pop in. And even for you, I mean, like you and Suzanne are sharing a lot of clothes now. Like, I do think there is that like, I want to shop with my daughter because it's fun and it's cool once they do hit a certain age. So I think like, that's the biggest thing I think for retail in general is like, we all have kids, we all are busy, but how can you make it helpful for me to stop in, an enjoyable experience for me to stop in? And that's that, you know what I mean? Like, I think there's a huge piece of that that a lot of people are missing out on.
Absolutely. Or even these other things I love, like I'm very into sustainability. And so I love when retailers are like, bring back your clothes for us to recycle, or Target does a car seat recycling event that I love because that is a problem. Like, solve a problem for me. It's hard to recycle a car seat. You can't.
Yep. Yep.
You know, help me feel good about disposing of this item without putting it. I don't want to put it in a garbage can. Come on. Yeah. You're really telling me that's where this has to go. So is there a service that can also bring in your customers? Like you said, the play kitchen. The play kitchen is a perfect service. Oh my God, give me 10 minutes of just like brain time. Honestly.
Well, even think about I have a client.
I'll buy a pair of earrings. Yeah. Whatever.
I mean,
I'm
I have a client who created a like a closet for people in need, women in need, and women that were her shoppers came in. Like, she was like, if you want to get rid of old stuff, come drop it off with me. I'm opening like a private closet. And if you need help, like, here, discreetly send me a message and we'll set up a time. And it's like such a beautiful thing to, it solves a problem. It helps the community. It's like, it's doing good on so many levels. And it's just, I know it's more work for her, but I do think that there is that like bit of,
oh my gosh,
like you're talking about that service involved.
Host a Earth Day sustainability event and encourage girls to bring in clothes to swap, a swap and shop, come in, bring stuff to swap and shop it. And then, you know, buy a new pair of jeans to go with the top.
Such a good idea. Swap and shop on the 20th. Wow. I love that.
Sustainability, like, I think that's a huge trend across. I mean, that's something we're talking about a lot in marketing for real, but it's so big in retail. And I think it's something that local brands can really have an edge on, right? Because the sustainability of me going to my local retail shop and buying a sweater there, if I feel so much better about that from a sustainability perspective versus buying something online, having it shipped to my home, shipped to return because it doesn't fit right, shipped back to my home. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that smaller retailers need to think about that. I mean, like all of these things, it's really easy.
Value that service.
The big guys are going to take us out.
I feel good as a consumer when I'm supporting my small business. And I don't mind paying the premium. I know it's going to be more expensive than if I buy it from iantaylorloft.com, but I'm happy to pay for that because I know that it's offsetting all this carbon emissions if I were to ship and whatever. And I know I'm supporting small business too. I feel good about that.
You're just like also an ideal customer for so many boutiques because you are like, you do want to come out and shop. And I think like just the fact that like you are a great example of how there's so many more women like you. You know
what
I mean?
Let me tell you this too. Like sees like, okay. So as a seller, when I go into an environment and I see that it is set up for a sale and I've got a great seller experience, you know, like the girl's giving you just enough attention, but not too much, you know, that really high touch sales experience. I love that. Oh my God, that will open my wallet so fast. Are you kidding? I am like, you give me good service at a restaurant, at a shop, at a salon. Ooh, I love good service. I love good service. I mean, honestly, that I think is the key to any. And it feels probably like you give and you give and you give and so many people step all over you and so many people are like walking. You know, I know customer service is a drag, but there are a lot of people like me who are like, oh, okay, you're bringing it. I see you. I see you with your cute display and I see you with your high touch service and your email list and your, you know, all that stuff. I love that. And that does make me want to shop again. My little boutique in town, I will shout them out. Vintage Charm. They're so good at this. So good at this. You know, so I think that's a real skill to be honed. And that's something that will win you business, even if you don't feel it right now, because I don't always shop. I am kind of cheap. I don't always buy when I'm in there, but like I'm loyal and I will come back when it is time to buy that Easter dress or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if 100 people in your town shop with you 4 times a year, that's a steady business. Like that's a really steady business. Like it doesn't have to be so up and down, too, you know, like. I mean, I think for you, what do I want to say? Oh, shopping. Oh, I love this. I love this idea of the Earth Day event. Give me some other things that are coming up. Because again, you're seeing like far ahead for me, right? Like you're seeing Mother's Day. You're seeing summertime trends.
Right,
like,
women in sports.
What are some of the trends where people are spending money, at least from a high level? Like where are companies? Because you're working with like, you are working with like Procter & Gamble and like Johnny Walker and these like really big companies. Like, what are they thinking about? How are they spending their money? What are they advertising? And like, are they advertising to us? Because like, they know we're going to buy it.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, like brand names in the food CPG space that I'm in, they're all in crisis mode because everyone is fighting inflation. And inflation is crazy. you know, all your prices are crazy. And so what are people doing? They're buying the private label brands. They're buying the store brands. They're trading down, right? And this is happening in boutique land too, isn't it, right? People are buying the off-brand stuff from Amazon or whatever, from Temu.
Yeah.
Dupe culture. They're looking, you know, paying full price or paying full inflation price is out of the question for some people. Absolutely out of the question. So everyone's in a crisis mode trying to figure out, how do I claim my full value as a brand, right? That's the key question. And that's kind of like, I think that my cat really wants to be a part of this conversation now. That's the question everyone's trying to answer, is how do I establish a value in my brand so that when you're looking at, you know, Jim Beam versus Jack Daniels, right? I want it to be not even a question. Course you're going to choose my brand because I've convinced you, right? I've told you how cool it is. I've put it in the coolest place ever with the coolest stuff, and it's undeniably my choice. That's like what all they're trying to do. So the way they're doing that is by looking for these big breakthrough moments. A big trend right now is collabs, right? Collaborating with a hype beast, you know, to do a, this is funny, like, you've never seen more cereal plus sneaker collabs, okay? There's like a Fruity Pebbles sneaker, if you want that. That exists in the world. That's a thing. But that's what they're doing. That's, they're looking at these, like, what I was saying earlier about, like, trying to break through with the idea, right? That's what they're trying to do, is like, okay, this is something that's never been done before. That's a marketing word that is, like, way overused. We abbreviate it to NBDB. Never been done before.
NBDB.
Sneaker collab. Fruity Pebble sneakers. Race out and get them. Like, this is what, but this is what's happening, okay? Jack Daniels did a huge collab with a fashion designer born and raised. That there's, this is happening all over the place. So in the food and CPG industry, you even see it with, like, I mean, look at, like, Gillette Razor partnering with Rifle Paper Company to do those custom printed razors. I was looking at those, you know, they're, like, way more expensive than the other razors.
Listen, Rifle Paper Company has a chokehold on me because their style looks so good in my house. Okay. The rugs, I mean, that's the thing, is if you do have a design, if you are an artist and you're listening to this, mm-hmm. you are a designer, you're listening to this, there is so much space for you to collab with so many different areas. And when you have such an established brand, like we're talking about Rifle Paper Company, right? Like, that style is so distinctive. It doesn't matter if it's a spring season, the fall season, a wallpaper, a chair for Target. I mean, they did a Target thing, stationery, whatever. Mm-hmm. It looks good and you know it's them. You know, I think the thing in boutique land that's gotten, it's gotten so diluted because everyone just kind of looks the same. We're all selling affordable clothes to women. It's just like boring, you know.
Like, oh my God, can I tell you about one of my favorite, like, little sleepy Midwest retail brands?
Yes.
You know, I love some Vera Bradley.
Vera Bradley's probably going to start coming back in like a year, though, if we're being honest.
It's fully back.
Is it back?
And it went away. Like, talk about distinctive patterns. Like, first of all, surface pattern girl, throw some respect on Vera Bradley.
Vera Bradley's Paisleys are world renowned. Okay. Like, I just, it's the Paisley. They own Paisley. They own Paisley.
They own it. And they own, I mean, they're owning floral too. Their whole collection is great. They get me to shop all the time. They do lots of collabs, but even their original work, they stay so laser focused on their identity, which is in pattern, and it's in, you know, floral and paisley, and it's really in travel. Like, I go there all the time. They have the best, like, travel beauty. Suzanne and I just bought matching travel beauty trousers for our Paris trip.
Yeah.
I got my mother-in-law this absolutely beautiful throw blanket that's called Springtime in Paris, and it's gorgeous. So I did buy that to go with my Springtime in Paris travel kits, and yeah, it's all on vibe. So
no, but it's like, you say Vera Bradley and you, it pops in your head. Like, you say Rifle Paper Company, it pops in your head. You say, like, that's it. You gotta create that distinctive look, the distinctive voice, and so that when someone says your brand name, it just pops right in.
You know, it all comes back to Moana's grandma, okay? Moana's grandma. If you haven't seen Moana, go and watch it. And the key message she gives to Moana is, remember who you are. Know who you are, right? And just let that sing out, whatever it is. If it's Paisley, if it's kitties, titties, whatever it is, you know, like, do that and that will sing. I think that's why we all love these headbands that Lily Sadoogie makes. Like,
yep.
She's so distinctive. And yet this thing is dumb expensive, but like, y'all bought it for me. That's another thing, gifting people, because what you won't buy for yourself, you will buy for someone else.
You will buy for someone else. Well, and you're speaking to
and that's what makes it a good gift, right? Is like, it's that thing that they won't buy for themselves. So you as a friend come in and buy it and you're like, I love you.
part of the value of it being higher price item is it has that brand cachet to it. I mean, that is part of the value.
It's beautiful. I'm sorry. It's like very high quality. It's worth it. I've never questioned the price of it.
And that's the thing. There cannot, and I think this is why we're also like annoyed about, you know, corporate greed coming into like things like groceries, because it's like, but actually, like, it's not well made. Like, it's not, you haven't done anything different to this product. You're just charging more for it because you decided to, right? Where it's like, I do think that you have to have integrity with your pricing and the real like touch value of something, because you also don't want someone to touch something and be like, this is not, I mean, that's been happening left and right, like at Nordstrom's and things, where someone will walk into a Nordstrom, start feeling things, start touching things, start seeing the designs, looking at the seams and saying, this is not worth $400. Like, are you kidding me? You know? So I think this is also where boutiques have this really fun, like $50 to $200 range that they need to start playing more in. Instead of saying, oh, we're going to take something, instead of it being $30, you know, $50 is going to be $30. No, what's $50 that could be $90? You know, like,
yeah.
How could you upgrade and up level and add value, not just to like add to the price, but to actually extend your assortment to make a beautiful piece and charge more for
it. Well, I think it's that work done beforehand of, is this something that I truly like? You've said this. Is it a no or a hell yes? Like, is this a hell yes? Like, I have to have it. I don't even care what the price is. That's what you want in your store. That's what you want in your store. You know,
yeah.
There are things I don't even look at the price, you guys. I don't even look.
This is a reminder to you all. This is a public service announcement that Noelle is a beautiful example of.
And I'll tell you, I'm one of the cheapest friends in my friend group. I'm the cheapest. I'll say it. I'm probably the cheapest friend in my friend group.
You're very thrifty.
People out here who shop with no budget. None.
Yeah. Yeah.
No list.
Great example. You're a great example of a good boutique, a clear boutique, a classic boutique shopper. And I think this is. But yes. I'm glad we're continuing.
There's
this.
Millions.
Well, I did a podcast recently where I talked a little bit about this, where it's just like, I think you're forgetting there are people that will pay. There are people out there, but you have to show up and you have to have, even if you can't find interesting pieces. Okay. Like, let's jump over that. Even if you style them differently, even if you style it, accessorize it. I mean, like, all of that stuff goes into play. And I think that so many people are still doing the, hey, here's a shirt. It's for sale. It's this price. And like, that just doesn't fly anymore. It just can't, you know? And so I think that you've touched on so many great things: quality, price, aesthetic, like branding. I mean, like, we have gone through the whole gamut of so many things. Like, I just feel like, you know, now is the time, especially because of the timing of what is coming out, like in springtime, like, you have a chance right now to really look at your business and say, what, like, be ruthless, be relentless. Mm-hmm. What do you need to change? Is it a logo? Is it the name of your brand? Is it the core part of your assortment? Is it the stuff that doesn't sell?
Do you have enough pickleball gear? Do you have enough? Do you?
Athletic gear. I'm telling you,
athleisure.
Yep.
You know, here's the other thing I want to say about trends. It's about to be the summer of women in sports. We've got the Paris Olympics.
Yep.
You also remember how exciting Roland Garros was last year.
Yep.
We're going to have, tennis. We're going to have Olympics. We're going to have so much. Simone Biles is back in the Olympics. Like, this is going to be, and we're coming off of this incredible March Madness. This is going to be such a summer of, I think, women in sports and just, you know, women in achievement. So I'm excited for that to continue. And I would say, yeah, double down on athleisure, pickleball gear. It's going to be an active summer.
Yeah. Well, and that's what gears you up for the holiday season too, right? Because right now is also the time where you can take a little bit of risk and test some things, try some things. And then for Christmas, for holiday season, come back with it even better and more expensive and go for it, right? And even like go a little bit deeper where instead of it's a basic item, a basic pickleball skirt, you have the bedazzled pickleball skirt, you know, for holiday. But like that, yes. Like I freaking love talking to you about all this stuff because it just makes me want to start a brand again. What the heck not? But it's true. I mean, I think when you're excited, when you're up on all this stuff, and when you really do have that unwavering confidence to just go for what you want.
Yes. Yeah.
Like nothing can stop you.
You got to have a squad. You got to have, you know, your high vibe tribe that is just going to be that positive sounding board. Because, you know, this is what I always say is like, everyone else is going to say no to you. Everyone else is going to tell you how stupid it is. Don't say that to yourself. Don't shoot yourself down. And then, of course, like when my friend comes to me, you know, I'm not going to shoot her down either. And I think those people around you just to let you fail fast. You know, if it is a crash and burn, so what? You get back up, you go again. How many times have you watched me crash and burn, Emily?
Same. Like, but that's the thing. The falling, I really believe in that. Failing forward. You learn more. Like, there are so many people. Like, I joke I could start a boutique again tomorrow because, like, why not? Like, why? I never failed at my last one. It was a choice to slow it down. It was a choice to, like, move on from it, right? But, I'm excited about it now. Like, let's try it again.
Because, like, iteration it's so different. Of it, you know, like, we have to allow ourselves as women the ability to iterate, right? Like, not everything comes out fully made. Like, let an idea grow. Let it change. Yeah, maybe you do need to make a 15-degree pivot, or maybe you do need to do something else. Let it evolve. Let it be a living, breathing thing.
God, we have to wrap up because it's becoming the longest podcast ever. But thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. And I know there was like literally a couple people. My buddy Sean was like, can we get Noelle on your podcast? Because I don't know where he met you, but like you've been at some events, you know, you pop into some of my retreats sometimes, you'll pop in a mastermind here and there. But like, I'm just really glad to like have you on the pod. So you're just like cemented in the.
Yeah, happy. History. Happy to do it.
If you want to follow Noelle, if you want to follow our adventures, you want to follow Noelle, can we invite people to follow you on Instagram?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Or follow me on LinkedIn to see me LinkedIn spamming you.
Yeah. Post all of our links down in the comments. But thank you, Noelle, for joining me. I love you so much.
Oh, I love you. I love you. I love Boutique Land. Thank you for all of the joy you all give me with your wonderful wares.